time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Pena shoots one to right field. That'll be down for a hit. In the score, Corey Lee. The Astros lead 3-2. Jeremy Pena.
I've been so good lately about not trying to talk over the rejoiner, and I did it today.
It's a good thing you're a diva and you need your microphone turned on by Sean Mapes.
It's so bad. I'm Vanessa Richardson.
No, Paul, you're Snooki from the Jersey Shore.
Paul Gallant.
You are very orange Sean today.
Mapes. So let me explain.
So
I get a spray tan.
I'm an Oompa Loompa.
The day before I do anything on TV, but I have to shower after the spray tan in order for it to look okay.
Okay.
Because at first it's very, very, very strong.
Yeah.
Well,
you don't
I woke
say.
Up late this morning.
Oh no!
So I did not shower. AKA, I'm stanky.
So you can shower for AT&T Sportsnet Southwest, but
not
you can't shower
it's
for me and Sean.
Absolutely correct.
And our ESPN 97.5. Viewers on twitch.tv.
This guy
ESPN
says he has good hygiene, yet before the show, he sneezed so grossly that he said, quote, I've never had this much snot before
Classic
in my
deflection.
Life. So you know what?
What a
I
deflection.
I may be orange, but you're the snotty one.
And he used razors for like a month
consecutively. Yeah, we were talking about that before the start of the show, because I had questions about spray tans. I've never gotten one. And it's something that you would think, okay, if you get a spray tan, it would give you a breakout or something like that. And I don't know how we got down this road, but I used to use like the same razor because I was so cheap. Again, I'm really cheap. I was so bad about it in college. I would use the same razor for basically months at a time, which is horrible, especially if you're shaving every single day. And even worse, if you're an idiot and go against the grain while you shave.
But your hair grows quickly, your facial hair.
It grows too quickly.
Yeah, mine
right?
too.
I legitimately used to shave every single day. And I'm saying, like, this was starting even when I was prepubescent in, like, seventh grade.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because it was like it was thick peach fuzz. It was gross.
Thick. Jeremy Pena last night.
Jeremy Pena.
Yeah, if you head to Paul's Twitter, by the way, you will hear that song in full.
People don't get it. I was bummed out about
this.
I think
you sound just like Eddie Vedder.
Two likes? This is an absolute travesty.
Wait, you only got two likes.
Only got two likes. Should I just kill myself right now?
Do you remember when you made the four-hour video and you only got 14?
Yes, I do remember that, Vanessa. Thanks for bringing it up.
I'm going to post a dumb video tonight and see how many likes I get.
You'll get a lot because you're a hot chick where Paul Gallant, handsome, respected journalist in the sports world. I heard that noise. He can only get two likes when he's singing Jeremy Pena.
It is Friday, and you can tell that it's Friday. Jeremy Pena with that go-ahead single in the 10th. That ended up being the score that would win the game 3-2 last night. The highlight last night, or should I say the low light, the thing that people need to be the most worried about is, of course, Jose Altuve.
Yeah, God, the All-Stars are dropping like flies right now. I hope that he's all right. I hope the Astros play cautious. And I doubt that we'll see Altuve in the All-Star game. That wasn't good to see.
No, it wasn't. He got hit with a pitch. It happened in the first inning. He actually ended up going around the bases and doing what he needed to do. But then it just became too much. The pain did. The latest update, I believe, is a contusion.
Do you trust them when they say something like that, though?
The Astros are very hush-hush about injuries. They did say he's day-to-day. I'll tell you right now, I don't like day-to-day.
I don't either.
I don't like day-to-day. I would rather hear Dusty, who usually tries to keep it real, even though the Astros are hush-hush. I feel like in the past, when there's been an injury or something like that, that's not a big deal, Dusty will say something along the lines of, it's precautionary. We're going to give it a few days. Didn't say that. So we will see, obviously hoping it's nothing serious for Altuve.
Hand injuries, wrist injuries, they always freak me out when we're talking about batters. And we've seen in the past that it can affect somebody coming back. I know we've seen, I think Alex Bregman's have struggles after a wrist injury. I think Carlos Correa had some from back in the day, too. They happen. That's the nature of, you know, facing a guy throwing 90 to 100 miles per hour in a tight window. You can get hit right on those hands. Hopefully he is okay. Mauricio Dubon came in.
He was a nice surprise. He did a good job.
I think he had an error not too long after coming in at
first. He did,
first
but he
in
had
the
a good catch.
Inning, but he made a great catch to make up for it, and I just love his name. Mauricio Dubon.
That's because
my middle name is Maurice.
Some people call me Maurice.
Yes. Woo-hoo. The whitest person with the middle name of Maurice in the world, probably.
So Mauricio Dubon was a nice surprise. He also had a good hit that advanced Corey Lee to third base. One of those small things that's not a game changer, but I just thought overall, other than the error, he did a nice job. Obviously, though, T's and P's, thoughts and prayers for Jose Altuve because the Astros definitely need him.
And the injuries are adding up. We did get an update yesterday from Dusty Baker on Michael Brantley. So he went back to Houston to get his shoulder looked at. He tried to take a swing, and it didn't feel right per Dusty Baker. It's not a setback. It's just... not a go forward. Thanks,
Wait,
Dusty.
Dusty said that?
Dusty said, again, it's not a setback. It's just not a go forward.
If there's audio from that, I need that soundbite because that that describes my whole life. It's
713-780-3776.
Ryan! Is this Nolan Ryan? Just
yes,
kidding.
Of course.
Ryan is calling in Vanessa and Galant
listener.
To talk about the Astros.
Guys.
Ryan, hi!
Hi. So I'm going to go ahead and make a take, and I hope this doesn't happen.
Okay.
But I think the Astros are going to be hurt going into the preseason, and Pauly G's side chick is going to claw its way up. It's going to be a dogfight in September.
Yeah.
Ooh, thanks for the call, Ryan. I appreciate you stirring the pot.
I'm not thrilled about the idea of going to Seattle for a series where the Astros might not have Michael Brantley, might not have Jose Altuve, might not have Justin Verlander. Might not have Yordan Alvarez. Not thrilled about that idea.
It may be one of the most cliche things that we say in sports, that sometimes the teams that do the best in playoffs are the healthiest. It is said so much because it is true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if we're looking at a month from now, God forbid, and we don't have progress on Michael Brantley, we still don't know what's going on with Lance McCullers Jr.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about him, too.
Jose Altuve may have some issues. Yordan... what's going on with his hand? To your point, the injuries are adding up.
This could be the moment, though, when we take a look back at the Astros 2022 World Series Championship. I guess they don't sell DVDs anymore, but the World Series Championship straight downloaded to your Amazon Prime account.
Do you remember when everyone said Blu-rays were going to happen?
I do.
Blu-rays or a Blu-ray?
They did not. Spoiler
alert. Yeah, they didn't.
They did not. But... in 2022, when we're looking back, this could be the moment, like during the, if they were to do like an NFL Films narrator, the Astros were injured. They were playing at their best. It was the moment where they all were able to rally together and built their mettle, their resolve for the closing stretch of the season. And then you put NFL Films music in the background or something like that. Yeah, they're banged up right now. We'll see what happens. By the way, since the Astros are really banged up, but they did win their 10th straight series, if you count the two series against the Yankees
say,
as one.
Go ahead, sorry.
Things
ADHD.
Are good. Things are good.
Okay.
I mean, even with the injuries, things are pretty damn good right now. They have the best record in baseball since, I want to say, June 12th.
I was going to ask how you got to 10-0, but you're counting that one Yankees game as an addition to the
series.
Yeah,
someone tweeted that out last night, and I said, you know what? I like the way that you think. Technically, that was one series. One game playing against the Yankees
right.
just out of nowhere. So anyway, speaking of those New York Yankees, it's time for some Yankees Watch.
Yankees Watch?
Yankees Watch.
Damn Yankees!
2022.
Okay, what's the latest, Paul Gallant, our Yankees hater expert?
They lost to the Reds again. What a bunch of losers.
The Red Legs.
Oh, my God. They're only 3.5 games up of the Astros right now. There was some Yankee fan, Vanessa, that I went to college with who was trying to bring up, you know, statistics, facts, data to an argument against me, which... good luck with that, about how the Yankees bullpen isn't as bad as I made it out to be.
You a big stats guy?
No, not really. No. I'm up all about heart and feeling because it's the laziest way to approach a sports take. I feel this way. I think this way. You don't have to be right. It's all about what's in your heart. And everyone has told me that whatever's in my heart is true. But anyway, the Astros, I feel like, are looking very, very good, very favorable in a matchup against New York, assuming health. In the playoffs, because the Yankees bullpen struggled against Boston this past weekend and has struggled in two games against the Cincinnati Reds. They were tied 1-1 in the eighth inning, and some guy named Luisiga.
Whoa.
Luisiga.
Hey, listen. Luisiga. I have zero room to talk when it comes to name pronunciation.
I don't know. So, it's some Italian crap. Whatever.
I do want to give a shout out to Ryan Pressly because since that disastrous game against the Yankees on June 23rd, 7 games, he's gone 8 innings. He's retired every hitter.
Yeah.
14 strikeouts of the last 24 batters he faced. So, listen, Ryan Pressly is one of those guys that can be inconsistent, but as Brian Bogusevic said last night on the postgame show, that's the life of Ryan Pressly, right? Where you are going to have a really bad game, and then it takes 7 for people to go, okay, fine, he's back.
And that's what you get with a good closer or a good reliever, where the Yankees have some guy named Lasagna allowing 3 runs in the 8th inning, and then some other guy named like Luigi or Luigi who allowed 3 runs in the 10th inning. So their bullpen did them in last night. They actually did score enough runs to, in the 8th inning, still send it to extra innings, but they lost. Again, so they lose 2 of 3 to Cincinnati to complete Yankees watch, Vanessa, and now they play Boston 3 times before the All-Star break. And they have a lot of games against Boston still left to go. And if you watch this past weekend series, any of it, Boston really, I think, held their own in that series. I don't think they're as good as New York, but they're at the very least a pain in the ass enough that the Astros should continue to be able to get further and further up the American League pennant standings.
Coming up, some NBA news that's a lot like my dating life. Starts out with some hope and then just ends up being disappointing.
Damn.
That's
Dark.
Next on Vanessa and Gallant.
You gonna answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
My little Indiana heart was happy yesterday because I thought for the first time in a long time the Pacers were going to spend the big bucks.
They tried to.
They did try. Center DeAndre Ayton did agree to a 4-year, $133 million maximum offer sheet with the Pacers, his agents confirmed to Woj, of course. The Phoenix Suns then had 48 hours to match it. And they did match set offer.
And it didn't take long.
Nope.
I mean, we're talking less than an hour, I think, for them to actually match the offer. And it completes one of the strangest sagas, Vanessa, that I can remember recently with an NBA player. Because if you don't remember, during the Western Conference semifinals between the Phoenix Suns and Dallas Mavericks, in Game 7, when Dallas was just whooping that ass, DeAndre Ayton got benched for the entirety of the second half. And there was some stuff seen on the bench where it looked like there was some awkwardness between the Suns coach and their Suns coach, Monty Williams, and Ayton.
Which is funny because, sorry, just to cut in real quick. Monty Williams, known as one of the like most chill, inspirational, cool coaches ever.
Right.
Remember all his locker room speeches that went viral?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And afterwards, too, you heard Devin Booker expressing concern about his mental health. And you kind of got the feeling, well, Phoenix is going to just move on from DeAndre Ayton in some way, shape, or form. Probably some sort of sign and trade or something like that. But they didn't. They didn't sign him to an extension. And if I'm not mistaken, too, there were some more like just kind of rumors about how DeAndre Ayton doesn't care, isn't committed, was distracted, stuff like that. Which is consistent with things that happen with the Phoenix Suns. Robert Sarver, the owner of the Suns, is thought to be by most people across sports as one of the worst owners in sports. And yet, then all of a sudden, they decide to, 19 minutes later, yeah, as Sean Mapes put in our rundown.
That's way quicker than I thought.
19
I would have said
minutes,
it was a couple hours.
Match the offer. And here's what's crazy. So Kevin Durant has publicly said, through his people at least, that Phoenix is one of the teams that he would like to play for. Well, if the Suns want to get Kevin Durant, DeAndre Ayton's going to have to be a piece involved in a trade, whether it's a two-team trade or a three-team trade. But now that the Suns matched DeAndre Ayton, who I'm sure is pissed off that he did not get the full offer that he possibly could have for an extension from the Suns, they've destroyed the relationship with the guy. And on top of that, they can't trade DeAndre Ayton as part of any deal until January 15th. Making matters even worse, DeAndre Ayton has the power to veto any trade.
That's that Deshaun Watson type deal.
Right, and I don't know, if you're DeAndre Ayton, why not just sit out and veto the trade just to say bleep off to Suns ownership. I don't know what the Suns are doing here. It really feels like they messed this one up. And unfortunately for you, Vanessa, yeah, he's not going to the Pacers.
I don't know that he would have won the Pacers a championship. It's just something that I was excited about. But, you know, he would have definitely improved the team.
He's not great, but he's a good player.
If you know anything about the Pacers or Indiana sports teams in general, they definitely fit the Midwest cheap stereotype. So for them to spend that amount of money, I would have been shocked. But no DeAndre Ayton to the Pacers. Alas, I think his agents did a really good job of making sure that they got somebody else to bite that deal, so the Suns knew what they were about to lose. James Harden is bussing for real, no cap.
Oh, God, Jesus.
We have a group message.
Yeah, we do.
At creatively and appropriately titled VAG.
Well, that's what our acronym is for the show.
Last night, Paul sent a screenshot from NBA on ESPN's Instagram account. And if you don't have an Instagram, have no fear. I'll explain what NBA on ESPN and ESPN do on Instagram. They quote the most random things from players and then put a bunch of emojis. And they did that last night. James Harden is on a mission with the angry emoji. James Harden's quote, "I'm taking this summer as an opportunity to make sure that I get back to the elite level that I know I can be at and that I will be at." This morning on Get Up, I believe it was, Brian Windhorst had said, I caught a couple minutes of that. He said, James Harden is going to probably sign a one-year contract in hopes of having a quote-unquote prove-it year. So, my question for you fellas, does James Harden prove it?
This idea that he could prove it by having a full offseason to work with Joel Embiid and the Sixers, I think is overstated. I don't believe he'll ever be the same player that he used to be because I don't think that he puts in the work, not as a scorer or whatever, with, you know, all of the things that he is capable of doing. I mean, there are some things that Harden is still very skilled at when it comes to playing basketball. I think he's still a damn good passer when he actually wants to. I think that he's pretty good at driving through the lane when he wants to. He just doesn't seem to want to do it as much. But he doesn't take care of his body in a way that he should. And, I mean, we've all seen it. Like, you physically look at him and you're like, yeah, this guy probably could put in a little bit more effort off the court. And we've heard him say that, yeah, hey, like, I need to do this, but when you haven't done it for 2 years, you can throw all sorts of excuses out there. COVID, the pandemic, playing for a Nets team that had a Kyrie Irving that didn't seem to want to be there, having been a part of a Rockets team that clearly was going in an alternative direction from the one that he was so used to over the 5 years before. All of those things, they're nice excuses, but it's still been 2.5 years since he has actually been about that action. So why should anyone believe that he's going to do what's necessary over a couple of months to be ready to go by the start of the regular season? And then after he does it by the start of the regular season, Vanessa, to continue it for a full regular season.
I respect this James Harden more than the one that left Houston. Because this James Harden is at least admitting he's not on an elite level. He needs to get back to what he was. He's saying he's going to put in the work. Now, will he actually put in the work? I don't know. But he's at least admitting in a way that he's not where he needs to be. When he left Houston, it was arrogant. It was, we can't make this work. I've tried. We've tried. I respect people that own their stuff. Almost said a naughty word. People that own that and are able to admit that they're not where they want to be. James Harden is at least like doing that now. Is he going to be as elite as he was? I don't think so. I think he's past his prime. I think that ship has sailed. Listen, we all get to an age physically where we're not what we once were, and you see that with athletes. You never know when that drop-off is. Mm-hmm. I think with James Harden, it's already happened. To your point, he does some things really well, but I don't see it either. Sean, what do you think? James Harden, going to be elite again or not?
I mean, he's not going to average like 35 points per game again. Like that, like how good he was, he'll never get to that point.
But does most he NBA think that won't. That's where he's going to be?
I mean, that's not what he needs to do to be successful on the Sixers. The Sixers, their best player is Joel Embiid.
Right.
He finished second in the MVP the last 2 years.
Here's what I wonder with him. Can he change the kind of player that he is? Will he go from... Because he still is, to an extent, a volume scorer. And we just saw, though, over the course of the last year that he is not able to do it in the same number that he used to. Is there a second phase of James Harden's career where he's humble and he's more of a distributor? Because he's a damn good passer.
So talking about the Brooklyn Nets, it's hilarious that there's a stretch after he got traded to the Nets and before he got injured in the playoffs against Milwaukee, where he was, and I think both KD and Kyrie were out because, of course, they were. He was legitimately awesome for the Nets. And, of course, again, when you're talking about the Nets, that means it was like a 25-game stretch where he was awesome enough where people were like, wait, is James Harden going to get MVP votes this year? So that was...
I remember that.
That was, again, like the spring of 2021.
Yeah.
So that is not... He is not miles away from at least being a useful NBA player. Last year, like, especially once he got traded to the Sixers and after the first three games where he just beat up on, like, I think it was the Knicks and the Magic, he like looked like he was going to be out of the league in 6 months. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to be that bad. I think he'll rebound just because it's hard to be worse than he was.
I have a follow-up question for both of you.
Yeah.
Does anyone care what he does in the regular season at all anymore?
No, that's a great point. I think in order to even...
Because he can probably show up there.
Yeah, to be successful, you have to get further in the playoffs than what does he usually get the
second
round.
And he always, like, he just, like, vanishes in the playoffs, too. It's weird what happens in the playoffs with him.
So I saw a stat on Twitter, and it just came up, so I can't, whatever, accredit it.
Yeah.
But it was James Harden has more seasons, regular seasons, where he's averaged 30 points per game than playoff series where he's averaged 30 points per game.
Wow.
And he's averaged 30 points per game in... three regular seasons. So that means it hasn't been great in the playoffs.
It's different in the playoffs. Like, his style lends itself to the regular season, but when things kind of get a little bit, let's say, more physical, there's a little more effort involved on the defensive side of things, too. And when refs, I think, are a little less willing to be generous with fouls that they call for most games.
Over the course of a series, there'll be a game where the crew is like, hey, usually you're not getting that call.
Yeah, exactly.
Scott Foster.
So, Kyrie Irving, by the way, has not asked for a trade. Now, if the Nets don't want him, that's something totally different. Kyrie has not said he wants a trade. He opted in. So where did the conversations come from? Is it because KD requested a trade and now everybody's like, let's trade Kyrie, come on.
It's because nobody wants him.
Was this from Woj?
This was, I forget who tweeted this out. Gotcha. I think it probably because it was an ESPN report, Vanessa, that I saw it in. What's funny about this is that, look, there's not demand for Kyrie anywhere. And the only team that seems to even want to entertain the idea of bringing him in, it's the Los Angeles Lakers, who are very desperate at this moment in time. And how funny would it be to see Kyrie and LeBron paired up again? By the way, probably would work, seeing as it did work in the past. But it's reflective of the non-existent market for him. No one wants to deal with his BS, and no one should have wanted to deal with his BS after Boston. And pretty much anyone who was connected to the situation in Boston that knew anything about it was like, listen... He was extremely difficult, and yet, for some reason, players across the NBA really like him, and that discrepancy between organizations, how they feel about Kyrie, and players, how they feel about Kyrie, it's truly something.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, it is time for our daily NFL segment, and oh boy, do we have a follow-up to the original beef, plus a funny tweet by someone on that same team. You do not want to miss this. This is hilarious. Coming up next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
55 is the number of days we have until the NFL regular season kicks off. We go to our jersey number expert, Paul Gallant. Who you got today, 55?
The late Junior Seau, six-time first-team All-Pro, 12-time Pro Bowler, NFL Man of the Year in 1994. Most famous for his time with the San Diego Chargers, had a couple of years with the Miami Dolphins, New England Patriots as well. Really sad. I mean, I can't believe that was 10 years ago where he shot himself.
Was that the first case of like CTE that really, really captivated the nation?
One of the biggest, because I think he was by far the most prominent player to have killed himself. And I mean, I remember when that took place. It was really sad. I mean, the guy was a hell of a player. And one of the people that I remember when I first started watching football as someone who was like an icon across the sport. Chargers had a couple of really good defenders back in the day, too. They had Ronnie Harrison, too, during Ronnie Harrison's early years. Man, and yeah, it's sad. He is one of, like, the preeminent San Diego Chargers.
Absolutely. All right, so our topic for today on our football – well, actually, you know what? Do we want to do the topic first or the follow-up to the beef first?
Beef!
All right, let's do the follow-up to the beef first because this is probably the thing getting the most attention. Hollywood Brown – commented on the Bernard Pollard / Lamar Jackson situation, which we're not going to recap it. They went back and forth on Twitter. Lamar said he'd never heard of Bernard Pollard simply because Pollard said that he's not a top 10 quarterback.
And Jackson did say, I regret the exchange after the fact.
Okay, there you go. Because it was very immature of him.
He looked like a loser. Yes.
Hollywood Brown tweeted, quote, narrative they trying to create on my dog is ridiculous.
My dog.
He can run the show in any type of offense. He just so happened to be in the one he is and doing it at a top level. And every wide receiver who ever played with him knows that. Hollywood, meanwhile, has claimed the reason he wanted out is that the, quote, system wasn't for me.
Specifically 2020.
So here's the thing. Lamar Jackson does what is – who's their offensive coordinator?
Greg Roman.
Greg Roman, right?
Yes.
Lamar Jackson and Greg Roman work together well. They make it work. Last year, in my opinion, was a total fluke because they had three insane injuries, and then they had – more COVID issues, by the way, than any other team. I mean, it was crazy. So COVID issues, injuries, I don't count last year. And 2020 was quite frankly rough, too, because of those COVID issues. Lamar does what works for Lamar. However, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? Like, as a result of the fact that he is the type of player that he is, Bernard Pollard's point stands. They don't sign big-time, high-dollar wide receivers because they need to spend the money in other places. I don't think that's that big of a deal to admit. I don't see why people are getting defensive.
It's an ego thing, though. He's been under flack for his throwing acumen for the entirety of his time in the league. I mean, shoot, remember it was Bill Polian who said he should be a wide receiver when he was first drafted. That's obviously stupid because the guy ended up winning MVP. But I'm going to look at it from Jackson's perspective. I'm still off Team Lamar Jackson, and I was a massive Lamar Jackson stan. I'll probably get back on eventually, but that Bernard Pollard thing, I just thought it was so weak. But to Marquise Hollywood Brown's point, who again has said in the past that Greg Roman's system wasn't for him, he said in that quote that you read just a second ago on Twitter, he can run the show in any type of offense. He just so happened to be the one he's in. Okay. I mean, that is another shot fired against Greg Roman's offense. And Greg Roman has clearly had success in the NFL, but I don't think that he has ever been able to build off of offenses that are centered around elite mobile quarterbacks. We saw it in San Francisco with Colin Kaepernick. Should Colin Kaepernick forget all the stuff off the field and the kneeling? Should Colin Kaepernick have fallen off a cliff to the degree that he did, given the athletic talent that we saw him have? We all watched that game that he had with the 49ers against the Packers in the playoffs. If you're going to tell me that guy's not a good player and never has been a good player, then you're just stupid. That guy was amazing in that game. For whatever reason, it hit a wall. Are we going to blame that exclusively on Colin Kaepernick and not take a look at Greg Roman, who has been the constant in these two quarterbacks'
careers?
That's a great
point.
Lamar Jackson has never taken steps forward as a quarterback. I'm not going to say it's all Greg Roman's fault that Lamar Jackson has not significantly improved. But for what it's worth, Roman's offenses seem to only be able to operate with a specific version of that quarterback and never find a way to develop that quarterback into a better player. Again, it's partly on these quarterbacks for not getting better and for hitting a career wall or whatever. And I'm not saying Lamar Jackson's even hit a career wall. I'm just saying Greg Roman has been a constant in two offensive systems where it feels like there has been a wall hit by both of those guys.
This is similar to your Sean McVay take, which is also kind of a hot take.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, look, McVay made a lot of boneheaded decisions in the playoffs and they still made it and won a Super Bowl.
There you go.
All that matters is if you win, you know, winners get to write history. There's plenty of moron generals out there that were able to win wars, you know? I mean, shoot, George McClellan, been watching a history documentary about the Civil War. So George McClellan was the first, like, commander of the Northern armies. The guy was, like, a total idiot and, like, a douche all the time. And this guy, because he was a part of this North winning the Civil War, ultimately still is able to find his way into politics after the war, despite being universally despised seemingly by just about anyone with a brain because of how poorly he did in the Civil War. They won the war. He fought in the war. Oh, he must be a good leader.
I just want to watch the History Channel now.
You're welcome.
The Killer Bees had a subject yesterday that Sean found interesting, and I agree. One player that you'll appreciate more after this season for the Texans and NFL in general. So were they saying, Sean, I must admit I didn't hear this segment. Mm. Were they saying...
Wow.
Sorry. Had to go get orange. Get spray tan.
Does Vanessa hate the Wheelhouse? 713-780-3776.
Or the Killer Bees, which is the show.
Oh,
it's
the Killer Bees.
About.
My bad. Does Paul Gallant listen to the segment? 713-780-3776.
Let's do one player...
Yeah, they did Texans first, and then they kind of opened it up.
Okay, let's do Texans players that we'll appreciate more after they retire, maybe?
After this season, right?
After this season.
Yes.
Okay.
It has to be Laremy Tunsil. Has to be. Guy didn't play last year. I think there's a lot of questions about whether or not he was worth two first-round picks. I mean, Bill O'Brien kind of broke the market by trading two first-round picks for the guy. Excuse me. Considering the guy did not play at all last year, essentially after that injury that he had, the hope is that when this guy comes back that he's going to be able to help protect Davis Mills' blind side, considering Davis Mills is not very mobile. It's one thing you know when you got somebody that can scoot around like a Tyrod Taylor or something under center. Your offensive tackle maybe is a little bit less important because of that, but when you got a guy like Davis Mills who seems to be a traditional pocket passer, you need to have a left tackle. So I'm hoping that it will be Laremy Tunsil at the end of the year, but I'm not sold it will be.
I'm hoping that it is Roy Lopez. I am a Roy Lopez fan. I love his energy. I love how much he loves football. He's a coach's kid. He played at New Mexico State, obviously a defensive tackle. I think that he could have a big impact this year. So if we're playing the hope game, I'm hoping that we look back and appreciate Roy Lopez after this season, because we all know what this season is not going to be. This isn't going to be the year that they go to the AFC Championship and win a Super Bowl. So let's temper the expectations. But I do think that, he's 24 now.
Yeah.
I think that you're going to see some things from Roy Lopez that make him make us appreciate his energy and his efforts more. Sean, what do you say?
I'm going to go a little bit more basic, but I think this guy's going to take kind of a next step. He showed flashes last year, and now I think Jonathan Gennard is not just by Texans fans, because I do think Texans fans appreciate him,
right,
his 8 sacks in 12 games, but I feel like he's going to start getting that national love where when they talk about the Texans, they're like, there's nobody on this team. And it's going to be, Jonathan Gennard plays for the Texans.
There you say, go.
You get 8 sacks on a team that, like, is losing most games. That's pretty good.
There's not a lot of passing happening, especially in the fourth quarter of the Texans game.
I'll be honest, I didn't even know he had 8 sacks last
year.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That's very under the
radar.
I
like that one.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk about a different Ravens player and take you back through a very, very funny moment in the NFL after that. Plus, a little update on the Open and a little update on a sports media member getting sued. We have a packed segment coming up next.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So I don't know how much I know about the history of every single team in the NFL, but I would think that if you played for a team, you'd at least know a thing or two about the mascot, the city, the name, whatever.
Maybe.
Maybe. Now, I also have had moments where I found something out, like when I realized it was all intents and purposes, my mind was blown. I always thought it was intensive. All intensive purposes. So there are certain things that happen where our minds are blown. It happens to all of us. And it happened for Marlon Humphrey, who, of course, plays for the Ravens. He tweeted, "The Ravens is named after Edgar Allan Poe? 3 question marks? I'm mind blown right now." To which Robert Griffin III replied and said, "Bro, we talked about that in meetings, fam." And he replied to Robert Griffin III, "I must have been lost because I was so surprised when I heard this." Now,
why did RG3 say bro and fam in the same tweet?
The mascot.
Tell me you're a corny without telling me you're corny.
Is Robert Griffin III cornier than Russell Wilson?
I don't know. I don't think Rob Parker would agree, but yeah. Anyway, that's a reference for another day. Continue, Vanessa.
Thank
sorry.
Thank you.
Don't get fired, Paul.
Yeah.
The mascot's name is Poe. So I'm surprised that he didn't know this based on that. Should Marlon Humphrey have known that the Ravens were named after Edgar Allan Poe's famous poem, "Quoth the Raven, Nevermore"?
I think it's
whatever
tricky. I mean, how many NFL players are aware of Edgar Allan Poe?
I feel like it's
who was
not
a
even
poet
Edgar
from the
Allan
1800s.
Poe, it's playing for a team, and don't you think they give you bullet points?
No.
Also, you have to think, like, in Marlon Humphrey's defense, when you walk into the meeting that day and they're like, so we're going to go over the history of the Ravens franchise, you're like,
tune out.
And by the way, they would never do that either. There's no way. Like, they don't care about the actual nickname. Do you feel like every single Houston Texan, when they come in, are sitting down and are being told about, like, Sam
no.
Houston
because there
leading
is
the army right against Santa Ana?
Deep Steel Blue? Yeah,
right. No. Yeah, yeah. You know, like, that. I wish that were the case because this stuff does fascinate me. And I do think that among NFL nicknames that the Ravens have a very
really cool, one.
Cool like spin on history because Edgar Allan Poe is from Baltimore. And Ravens are intelligent birds at the very least. They're not like stupid birds like a cardinal that could be easily eaten by a cat.
So they're real, right?
Yes, Ravens are real, very Vanessa. True. Yes, very
real. You've probably seen a Raven in your life.
Okay.
You've probably seen more crows, though, and ravens are different than crows.
Are they types of crows?
They're in the same bird family.
They're in the
yeah.
same fam? Like they're Robert like this,
they're,
the
third? Yes,
I don't know if they're bros, but they're in the same fam.
They're incredibly smart and supposedly have, like, the kind of... They have, like, they can remember people's faces. I read something about this a long time ago.
They, like, drop nuts that they can't break onto highways and let cars drive over them, and then they pick up the... broken nuts.
Yeah, they're really like among birds they are towards the top when it
okay,
comes to
see,
being
but,
smart.
Okay, so
Cardinals
I,
meanwhile are losers.
The
I
Ravens
hate Cardinals.
Website says named after a mythical bird in a famous poem.
Well, yes, cuz it's the Raven. Quoth the Raven nevermore.
In the story the Raven is mythical.
Okay, well but yeah,
it's a
why
figment
did they
of his
say
imagination.
Mythical
it's,
bird.
No, it's like in Narnia like the lion is mythical but lions exist.
Okay, whatever you guys.
The guy so look, the Raven the Raven is a poem where this dude's basically it's the middle of the night and he's tripping balls and he sees a raven essentially in his windowsill. And he just starts having, like, all sorts of self-doubt and anxiety. And he just starts asking the raven a ton of questions. I don't know if the raven's supposed to symbolize death or something like that. Because the raven just keeps on saying nevermore, nevermore, nevermore. And then I think the dude, homie G-Stacks, dies. And that's it.
The naming for the expansion
You're
Baltimore NFL team began in mid-February. Art Modell received permission from the league office to move his franchise from Cleveland, blah, blah, blah. They reached out to Indianapolis about taking the name Colts. But they said no. The other options were Raven, the Americans, the Marauders. Marauders?
Marauders, like pirates or something.
Yeah, Ravens is probably one of the coolest names in the NFL.
I think it's a cool way.
And the colors are awesome.
Yeah, when they wear, they're all black. It's yeah. pretty sick. But anyway, this reminded us of another moment in time. Like, Vanessa, did, most
Robin,
players,
I had not heard this.
I'm glad that Sean Mapes was able to bring this up in one of the commercial breaks. Because, look, most players have no idea what the hell's going on with the mascots. Like, they don't know that the Ravens' mascot's name is Poe. So, Robbie Anderson plays for the Carolina Panthers, and he's on the sideline during a mic'd up episode. And he had some questions about the Panthers mascot, which he did not think was a panther.
Great job!
What's that bear doing?
Like a bear.
Panther.
That's Sir Perk.
No, he said panther. Sir
Perk. How you say that?
Sir Perk.
Sir Perk. Oh, Sir Perk?
Wow.
You call him that?
Yeah, that's his name.
So you be like, what's up, Sir Perk?
He immediately corrected himself, though, and said, he said, what's that bear, that panther? So he didn't really think it was a bear,
know.
Did he?
I think
the other guy went bear.
Yeah.
And then he said, I'm panther.
Okay.
I bet he thought it was a bear.
Really?
And I don't blame him. The panther mascot, I mean, it's like a... It's a black jungle cat, but it's standing on its hind legs. You never see a cat on its hind legs.
It does look like a bear now that you say that.
Yeah.
That's Sir Purr, by the way.
Sir Purr. Yeah. Shout out to Poe, Sir Purr, Toro, all of the mascots that make the world go round. And the Texans never forget Toro last year won mascot of the year, guys. So
that's right.
It's pretty prestigious.
The
yeah,
organization
talk about
is on the way back.
The U.S. Open. What is our update on the
yeah,
U.S.
I like
Open?
Yeah, you said
other
U.S.
than
Open. Hell yeah.
This morning.
It's the Open.
It's the Open, that's
but
right.
But it's the British Open.
The British Open.
Even though it takes place in Scotland.
If I were a real golf fan, I'd say St. A.
Yeah, or you could say the Open, like I know Granada
the
would
Open.
Say. Why'd you say St. A like that? I kind of want to, let's dissect that.
St. A, because Saint somebody a. messaged me and was like, what's your opinion on St. A? And I was like, ooh, big golf guy.
I would
Perfect
assume they're
response.
Talking about St. Arnold.
No, St. Andrews.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's the only St. A. I think of.
Yeah.
St. Arnold's. Brewery.
Fantastic place. Do they sponsor us? Because then I do think of them.
I would gladly accept
So emotional moment this morning. Tigers heading to the 18th. Everybody starts crying. Grown men start crying. But what's the leaderboard update?
Well, here's the big news. Tiger's going to miss the cut. Tiger did not have a very good opening round. This was him after the opening round yesterday talking about a potential comeback for him.
Well, it looks like I'm going to have to shoot 66 tomorrow to have a chance. So obviously it has been done. Guys did it today, and I need as much as possible tomorrow to go ahead and do it.
The person who is leading right now is Cameron Young. But what is interesting, as we continue to watch the scoreboard, Dustin Johnson is 4 under today. So right now he is tied with Cameron Young, who has yet to tee off, I believe. And Dustin Johnson, of course, famously has left for the Live Laugh
Hashtag Live Laugh Love
Golf Tour, right? So it's got to be very awkward for the broadcasters on this because they're not allowed to mention the Live Golf Tour.
And the audio of them trying to work around it, God bless them, is so awkward. Speaking of audio, we have some more with Lefty. He was not happy being asked multiple times about not attending the Open Champions Dinner.
Even missing out on a big occasion like that, a past champions dinner at 154.
Let it go, dude. Let it go. It's three times you've asked the same question. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I couldn't be happier.
I'm having Bill O'Brien flashbacks.
I do got to give Phil Mickelson a little bit of a defense here. There is nothing more annoying when someone just continuously asks the same question over and over again. Because when you are asking the same question over and over again, you are trying, as a reporter, to elicit a response from the person who is speaking. You're supposed to. I think there should be a little bit of decorum in that situation because those guys don't want to be there.
Right.
I do think, like, hey, you're going to continue to ask the guy the same question over and over again. Well, if he answers it, and we're talking about sports here, maybe in politics it's a little bit different. But in sports, if you ask the question and the guy doesn't give you an answer,
don't keep asking.
If you keep asking, you're kind of a douche.
Charles Barkley said on Pat McAfee show jokingly, if somebody gave me $200 million, I'd kill a relative regarding the Live Golf Tour.
Hell yeah.
That caught the eye of
Very
Greg Saudi Norman
friendly.
And the Live Golf Tour because they ended up reaching out to him. Quote, they called me and asked when I meet with them, and I said, yes, nothing that's imminent. I actually don't know everything they want from me. So to answer your question, 100% yes, I'm going to meet with Liv.
They probably heard him say he wanted to kill someone, and they're like, we're in.
If Charles Barkley's on the Live Golf Tour, I'm watching it.
Oh, I would too. I mean, honestly, I'm probably going to – if they can find a way to make it just as compelling as the PGA, which I don't think is that hard, I will definitely watch it. The funny thing has been is that the PGA's insistence that the Live Golf Tour is bad has, I think, been interesting for it. What? I'm supposed to – like, oh, the PGA is so holier than thou that they can, like, call out the Live Golf Tour? I mean, look. The Live Golf Tour is obviously taking money from people that, let's just be honest, have dubious track records. But, I mean, isn't that the same thing probably for PGA sponsorships too? Like, I don't know that, like, PGA money is necessarily that much cleaner than Live Golf Tour money.
Ooh, that is a hot take.
Well, I mean, shoot. Like, isn't all money dirty in some way, shape, or form?
From a broad perspective, yes.
Yeah.
What company would the PGA have to take money from for it to be a wash with the Saudi government?
North Korea.
So you think North Korea?
But they don't have that money. China? Oh, wait. Check that. I can't say that. Don't kill me, China. Russia, right now.
But everyone cut off basically all their Russian sponsors during the Ukraine.
Okay, that's what I mean, though. Like, if all of a sudden they were like, actually, you know what? We're going to take a little Russian money right now, huh? Oligarch money?
Doug Gottlieb, by the way, guys, just can't help himself getting involved in any sort of controversy. He, of course, reported that Freddie Freeman's former agents now, Casey Close, had never told him about Atlanta's deal. That's why Freddie was so emotional. Now MLB agent Casey Close has sued Doug Gottlieb over Freddie Freeman allegation for libel, I believe.
I got a D in comm law, so keep this in mind. Like, this is the only class I've ever gotten below a B in my life. But... yeah, that's right, Sean. That's right. Yeah, roll your eyes.
You didn't have to throw in the second part.
I did have to throw in the second part. I'm so smart.
Did you just not try?
Yes, I didn't show up for any of the classes.
He just can't wrap his head around the law.
Right.
I got a 37 on the first test. So remember they like showed the high score and the low score on the whiteboard, and I was like, "Who's the idiot that got a 37?" And I saw
and
my test, and I was like, "Oh my god, This is the worst." But anyway, circling back, to accuse someone of libel, you have to prove actual malice. And I don't think that Doug Gottlieb, who, yes, from time to time can be a bit of a antagonistic person, I don't think that Doug Gottlieb was intentionally trying to smear this guy when he got that report. And is this agent a public figure, I guess, is the big question. Because I would argue that someone who's a agent for a professional sports player is a public figure. So I feel like I think that's going to be the big question, is whether or not this guy's a public figure. If he is a public figure, yeah, you have to actually prove malice.
That would get really messy when you involve sources and, you know, would there be a subpoena? I don't think it goes anywhere. I think it's him making a statement regardless. We'll follow that closely because Doug Gottlieb never shies away from controversy. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk a little Astros plus a Big 12 media day. You got to hear to believe. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.